the Pilot TV podcast this week, we are following Rob Lowe to his new job as a police chief in Boston, Lincolnshire, thanks to ITV's Wild Bill, getting creeped out by Patricia Arquette's overbearing parenting in The Act, and breaking literary shackles for the TV-exclusive follow-up to last year's Big Little Lies. Now, with added Streep. All this and so much more on a podcast that, much like Netflix themselves, has willfully forgotten the fact that season 3 of Jessica Jones is also out this week. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to the Pilot TV podcast, your TV series consigliere, turning away lesser shows so that only the very best in small screen entertainment is admitted to your inner sanctum. Joining me in this sacred duty are, let's be honest, Terry and Boyd. I could dress this up, I could draw it out, but it's almost never anyone but Terry and Boyd, so why beat around the bush? How are you both? Boyd, how was your recent holiday?
It was great, thanks. Apart from the fact that I had my phone stolen from my actual pocket by someone.
And it was in a themed bar, is that right?
In a Manchester themed bar. It's got a bar called Manchester.
I've been there.
Right.
It's great.
In fact, you get your phone stolen.
But was that part of the authentic Manchester experience?
Oh, steady.
Am I going to get in trouble for that?
Yeah.
Bloody hell. Do you know what? I made a vow to myself. Some people have pointed out that I'm give James a bit of a hard time. So I thought, do you know what? I'm going to go out of my way to be nice to James today. Fucking 2 minutes in and he's slagging off the North by making out like it's robbing capital of Europe.
Yep.
So that's not my vow. It will not last.
All right, fair enough. How are you, Terry? How have you been? Would you like to tell us about your lunch?
I had a king-size beef and tomato pot noodle, and I had 2 cream eclairs.
And did you do anything special to the pot noodle?
Did I do anything? I added loads of soy sauce and tomato sauce, because anybody worth their salt knows that the pot noodle needs a little bit of flavour assistance.
To be specific, you squeezed half a bottle of ketchup into your tot noodle.
Maybe not half a bottle.
It looked like half a bottle.
As
someone on Twitter pointed out, any self-respecting northerner would, of course, have squeezed brown sauce into their pot noodle. So really, you're just too southern now for your own good. You've become southern. The north has been washed off.
Is this your own version of the sausage sandwich game, where you have brown sauce, red sauce, or no sauce at all? Do you know the sausage sandwich game?
Are we allowed to talk about that now since his fall from grace?
Well, I'm not even going to listen. Whose
game is that?
It was Danny Baker's
game.
It was every single... for years, where you ask someone if they had a sausage sandwich, would you have it with red sauce?
That's a shit game, because the answer to everything, not just sausage sandwiches, is always brown sauce.
Well, clearly not in the case of the pot noodle.
You're such a southerner.
What?
Ugh.
Yeah.
Are you going to be exceptionally posh and southern during this podcast?
I can't rule it out.
You can't rule it out.
I can't rule it out. Rules. Speaking of rules, what have you been watching?
Black Mirror. Well, no, actually, before I get into Black Mirror and my confused thoughts, I want to talk about the final episode of The Virtues. It was episode 4 this week, and it was absolutely one of the finest single episodes of British television, I think, ever. This started out really strong. Virtues, 4-parter. First 2 were brilliant. I watched them before it started, because I was actually hosting a BAFTA Q&A with Shane in the cast. But I've watched the others as it's gone out on TV, because I really loved having something to tune into every Wednesday. But let me tell you, between that and Years, I've been completely wrung out. Anybody who also watched episode 4 of Years and Years will understand why this week was especially emotional for me. But The Virtues, I mean, there were some single shots in the last third of that episode which were just pure, I mean, art. Incredible. Stephen Graham, Helen Behan, I mean, they just acted out of their skins. Phenomenal, exceptional telly. I just can't, I don't even have the words, really, clearly, for just how amazing episode 4.
Your gesticulations are saying it all.
You didn't watch it in Barcelona then, Boyd?
I didn't watch it. I haven't watched it yet, no. And I watched episode 3. Tara went live to watching it live after watching the first 2, which was on months and months and months ago. And I can't wait to watch the finale. I did watch your other, I was going to say Years and Years. Yes, it was a huge week. And I mentioned how episode 4 was the one. And spoiler alert, I've
been really careful on social. That is a huge spoiler.
I know, but like,
step in front of Boyd the spoiler twat.
I've seen people like after I got my phone.
I don't know it.
Responsible people.
All right. Well, you can like cast members and stuff. Okay, I'm not going to say.
I don't think we should.
I'm not going to. Okay, fine.
But it's fair to say that there is a big shock in episode 4. A very emotional
effing shock.
It's I mean, I watched them on consecutive nights and I was like, we talk a lot. This fucking pilot TV exists because we are in an exceptional time for television. But my God, never has it been proven like it was this week. Like those things going out on consecutive channels. And let's make the point that, you know, we talk a lot about Netflix, but these went out on main terrestrial British TV channels. Remarkable. James, did you watch either of these things? Are we watching The Shield again?
I think we all know the answer to that question. Sons of Anarchy, rewatch episode.
You say that, but it's got to the point now where almost every single major member of the S.H.I.E.L.D. cast has now appeared in Sons of Anarchy. CCH Pounder has just turned up. So, it's come full circle.
I mean, I was actually taking the piss.
Yeah, you've been fully serious.
Yeah,
I mean,
are you watching either of the things we were just talking about?
Well, what I did watch this week, which I took the time to watch, was the Deadwood movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Can we take a minute to talk about how amazing Deadwood is? Because it's been a long time since Deadwood came off the air, and I honestly had forgotten how good it was, but what makes it so brilliant. And the thing that hit home to me is, like, I started watching the movie, and we got a couple of minutes in, and I was like, I don't know what anyone is saying. I'm not following, like, because it took me a while to get back into the patois, like the speech patterns of the characters in Deadwood are like nothing else on television. And it's almost like listening to Shakespeare in iambic pentameter. Like, you kind of get the gist, but it's quite hard to penetrate.
What is happening? What iambic pentameter? What is going on?
You've never sounded more northern than you did just then.
You never sounded more pretentious.
No, I
enjoyed it.
Oh, God, you're such a bellend. I really didn't want to call you a bellend this episode.
What's pretentious about iambic pentameter?
The patois. You got the blah, 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 blah. Big pentameter to Shakespeare. Oh, God. Kill me.
Anyway, as I was saying, Deadwood is amazing, and the use of language in it is extraordinary. It's superlative, if you will. Sorry. It's so, so, so good. And I really enjoyed the film, and I like the fact that it was exactly what you want Deadwood to be and exactly what Deadwood should be, which is not, it wasn't like, oh, they have to deal with this particular issue and it's all resolved. Like, it was exactly what Deadwood is, which is a show about, in some ways, nothing. Like, Deadwood, which I guess it shares a lot of DNA with Mad Men in that regard, that it's a period piece. It is about a slice of time, an era, and a location, and a bunch of people, and it's just sections of their lives. And yes, of course, things happen, but it's not about, oh, what's the big mystery or whatnot. It's about being with them and spending time with them and enjoying them, and it's so fucking good. And Emma Shane, in particular, as Al Swearengen, is amazing. You're still rolling your eyes. Have you ever watched Deadwood, Terry?
Derry.
Remind me, what's
Hello,
your name
Derek.
Again?
I haven't.
Well, you should. You'd love it. It's amazing. And they have some of the best swearing you will ever hear, which you of all people should like. No?
No.
You don't like cowboys. What's the problem? What's your beef?
It's just very you.
Oh, God. Like, it can't just be me.
It's like, just so you. It's what, like...
Cowboys.
Yeah. No, okay. Thank you.
Terry's never going to watch Deadwood. Boy, you must have loved Deadwood.
Yes, I did love Deadwood. I need to watch this. I'm excited about watching it. I'm excited to watch the iambic pentameter.
Yeah. It's not literally in iambic pentameter. Or, of course, trochaic tetrameter, which would be an alternative form of verse.
Oh, wow.
But if this radio show could express the look that Terry just gave me.
I've got a degree in English. I've never heard of that.
How have you never heard of
this? I've got a degree in English.
All right, fine. Okay, so pentameter is because it's five syllables. Yeah.
We understand.
So tetrameter is four syllables. Iambic is it's where the stress falls on the syllables. So ba-boom. So the stress falls on the second syllable.
Yeah.
No
shit.
So it'd
be the flies and musters of the war.
Yes,
and trochaic would be the inverse.
Yeah. So are you explaining this to us?
What's the inverse?
It's trochaic.
Trochaic.
Iambic versus trochaic.
I was never taught that.
No?
No.
No, neither was I, because I didn't study it. But okay. I like to pick up stupid bits of information, really, so that I can say them to Terry in a condescending way on this podcast. But yes, I enjoyed Deadwood very much. I heartily recommend that if you have not seen it, you seek it out. It's on Sky Now TV. And if you haven't watched Deadwood, like Terry, like you're some weird Philistine, fucking go and do it.
So hang on. So to go back to my question, which you still haven't answered... Have you been watching either The Virtues or Years and Years?
I was rather hoping that I'd successfully sidestep that. No, I am not watching the rest of The Virtues because it is world-endingly depressing, even if it's amazing.
Oh, it gets way worse.
I know, and I can't be dealing with that. Years and Years, I do want to, but I haven't. I'm behind. There was just too much. There's too much Sons of Anarchy in my life. I can't do it.
My God.
Sorry. What was your Black Mirror thing?
So we didn't review it last week because we weren't allowed to. I watched the first two episodes, and I know there's been a lot of talk this week because it's had mixed reviews this season, I think it's fair to say. I've watched the first two episodes. I did not particularly like the first one.
Which one did you make?
Striking Vipers.
Oh, okay.
Which was the Anthony Mackie one.
Yeah.
Which is basically about two friends, two straight friends, one of whom is in a relationship, one of which has a family, and they essentially go to this VR fighting game called Striking Vipers, and one becomes a woman in the game, one is still a man in the game, and they end up in a sexual relationship in virtual reality, but not in the real world, and it's about how it makes them question their sexuality, and it's... I didn't particularly like it. I thought it was a bit stupid. The second one was Smithereens, which is Andrew Scott, which I actually thought was a lot better. But what I'm hearing a lot of, and I'm going to work my way through the rest of the season this weekend, is that it is much more hit and miss than previous episodes. Boyd, have you?
I've seen that. I've seen, so I completely disagree. I absolutely loved the first one, the Anthony Mackie.
Did you? Why?
Because I thought it was a really interesting exploration of male sexuality. And
did you?
Totally, 100%. I thought it was fascinating. And I thought, because something I'd never seen before. I hadn't seen that idea that these two guys could virtually get it on with one of them, you know, based on avatars in a fighting computer game. There's lots happening. It's about like the fighting thing, the computer game thing, the porn, the influence of porn on people's lives, the digital world influencing your sex life. I thought the relationship between Anthony Mackie and his wife was really well drawn. There's a brilliant scene in the restaurant, which I mentioned in my interview to Charlie Brooker, that I thought was a really great exploration of a long-term relationship gone to shit. I thought it was fascinating. I liked how it didn't really... There was no big statement about it. It was just like, this might happen to these two straight guys and they might end up having sex virtually. And it's interesting.
But the way that treated kind of, you know... I don't think it had any real interesting things to say about sexuality. Fundamentally misunderstood what it is to be gay. And I think the way it was like, oh, we got it on in this virtual. Does that mean I'm gay as a straight macho guy? There's a bit which essentially becomes a fight scene, which was, I just thought, really clumsy about what it was trying to say about straight men being threatened by the thought of being in, you know, in some way attracted to somebody of the same sex.
No, honestly, I thought it was fantastic, and it's my top five Black Mirror episodes of all time. And it's in someone else did one on The Guardian. Stuart Harris did this. That was the highest one he had as well. So it's not just me that loved it. I think it's really.
You can't just like tell me another person who likes it to prove that I'm wrong.
I'm insane for liking it. I'm not the only one who thinks it's
that is
really
just my
strong
opinion.
I respect your
James,
opinion.
James, you could weigh in.
I'm going to weigh in and tell you a fact. You ready for my facts? God. I myself...
Can I take back my
absolutely not
invitation?
Absolutely
to
not. I myself used to play a female night elf rogue in World of Warcraft.
So I've got a question.
Called Sylana.
So I had a question during this episode. I was interested in why a guy would choose to be a female character in a game.
Just to mix it up, really, because you get bored of using the same models. Because often in these games you have multiple characters, you use multiple ones. And sometimes you think, I quite fancy making a girl character. And sometimes the girl characters just look better than the male characters. Like the night elf...
So you can fancy yourself.
No, okay, I'll give you the honest one. It's like the night themselves in World of Warcraft were a bit shit looking and had wobbly ears, right. And the female ones just looked better. And I was like,
I actually think this is going to sound really wanky and pretentious, but your answer to that question is part. I think that what's great about this episode is it doesn't actually give you easy answers, and there are no. It's not about what it's like to be gay or what it's like to be straight. It's kind of about these two men who end up in this situation without them really thinking about it or planning it or actually thinking, why am I choosing to be a woman in this game? And that's what I love about it. I think it's really, really brilliant how it's not sticking to those kind of categories and those even, you know... I thought it was a brilliant exploration of lots and lots of different things without making them in any way simplistic.
But I think it just failed to... It may have worked for you, but it didn't work for me for exactly that reason. It didn't truly in any way engage with any of it. It amounted to nothing by the end of it.
That's because you yourself have never been a Night Elf rogue in World of Warcraft?
Quite possibly. Maybe I'm speaking from a place of inexperience.
I'm gonna out him. So Dan Jolin, who's one of the Empire Extended Family, he used to play World of Warcraft. He and I, in fact, used to play together. We were in the same guild. Anyway, I digress.
I'd love to see that.
This is relevant. This is relevant. This is your thing. I'm saying that we like Dan was really into like the role play aspect of this, so he made me join a role play server where people would routinely go up to other characters in character and have weird, sometimes quite sexy conversations with them. And you know, as a frankly quite attractive female Night Elf rogue, I got cracked onto by the odd gnome and a randy.
How did you feel about it?
I was perfectly fine with it, but I never let them have their wicked way with me or anything. It was all very, very above board. Although there is a T-shirt you can get that says "Rogues do it from behind," which I always thought was quite funny.
The Andrew Scott one, Smithereens, which you liked more. I really like that one. And what I liked about that again, slight spoiler alert: it's got a really ambiguous ending, which people have been coping with. So it doesn't resolve what's going on really. So the actual storyline is him kidnapping this guy for various reasons, and it is interesting how open-ended it's left, and I really like that aspect of it. I think what people seem to be saying about the whole series as a whole is two things. One is that it's addressing issues very kind of clunkily. People are accusing it of going, oh, this is about computer games and porn and sexuality. This one's about mobile phone usage going too far, which is the thing that Charlie Brooker makes fun of people thinking that the show is about. Mm. And he addresses that, I think, explicitly in the Andrew Scott episode, Smithereens. And then in the Miley Cyrus one, it's like, oh, this is about pop stars being exploited. But I think in every case, that's just the kind of bottom line hook of them. I think the series has almost got better, and I really like these three episodes because they just explore these things without really making a point. And that's what I like about them all. I think they've got that in common. That's what I was saying.
I think I'm judging each one in and of itself, and I just thought narratively, Smithereens, which was the Andrew Scott, he is remarkable in this. There's a whole scene where he's like ranting and the performance from him, I just think is incredible, absolutely incredible. Yeah. So I did like that one more. And look, the thing about Black Mirror is they are singular standalone episodes that, each season there's been ones you love and ones you hate, and they've only released three so far, right? Is that right?
This is just three this season because of the Bandersnatch thing that took like 10 years out of their lives. They couldn't have time.
Do
you want to admit the fact that you've never watched Black Mirror, James?
I have. I've seen the Pigfucker one and I've seen Bandersnatch. So I've seen two episodes of Black Mirror in my life.
That's pretty extraordinary. They're literally aimed at you.
I know. Well, if they made them episodic, they'd have me, but they didn't, so they haven't.
Oh, yeah, we've been through this.
Yeah.
You and your episodic fetish.
Speaking of episodic, it is time for Funny or Dire, the new, slightly more organised Funny or Dire, whereupon you two have both seen the episode. Mm-hmm. So this is very exciting. So this is the segment where I subject my famously humorless self to a comedy of our listeners' choosing. This week comes courtesy of one, at Terry_White, who said on last week's podcast, in fact, that if I don't like series 2, episode 1 of Gavin and Stacey, then there's no hope for me.
Yes.
So, I watched it.
And?
I like the way you build up the tension, as if it's the most dramatic moment.
It's like on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. They never just bang out the answer, do they? You have to have the build-up.
Of course.
Okay, here's the thing.
Oh, God.
Someone quite accurately, albeit snarkily, pointed out on Twitter this week that the problem with me jumping into sitcoms midway is that much of the humour is kind of born out of familiarity and affection, which is absent when you drop in halfway through the series. So there's a part of this where I felt a lot of this, like the nuances of this might have been lost on me in that I didn't really know who anyone was. So, like... I quite dug the trucking gag at the beginning, you know, when Nessa's driving the truck on the motorway and Rob Brydon's like going like, you know, his call sign is like, what was it, Dame Judi Dench, and she's Robert Mugabe. I'm like, what is happening? But it was, that was a giggle. And then, you know, they've got back from honeymoon. I got that. I registered it. Although I did sort of bump on one thing, and that's that, so it's called Gavin and Stacey, right? Yes. So presumably Gavin and Stacey are the leads.
Well, that's not really. Yeah.
That's the interesting thing.
This may have just been this episode, so bear in mind I haven't watched it. So he came across as a massive bellend.
Which one?
Gavin.
Gavin. Yeah.
I didn't like him at all.
Played by
and Stacey came across as a moron. And is this deliberate, or is it just this episode?
Well, no, look, so arguably the really interesting characters are Nessa and
who
Smithy,
I liked, who
right?
I also liked.
But the whole thing is ostensibly about the relationship between Gavin and Stacey, so that's kind of why...
So it's the people in their orbit, not so much them.
But they, and it's based around they met online, and the first episode picks up with them meeting for the first time in real life, and they take Nessa and Smithy with them for moral support. So it's all about the families and the bringing together of these two worlds, which has happened because of the relationship of Gavin and Stacey.
Yeah.
But one of the more interesting things is they're the least interesting characters in the entire thing.
Okay, good, because I very much felt that. Like, I thought James Corden was loads of fun in this. Like, I love it when he comes in and it's the whole, you haven't called me, never called, he's been on his honeymoon and he's feeling all jilted and upset. I thought that was really fun. I enjoyed, like, because obviously most of it happens in this restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of little moving parts to this, which was quite fun. Like, I enjoyed the kind of Smithy and is it Bryn, Rob Brydon?
Yeah.
Okay, so I enjoyed their whole dynamic thing and the way he's looking for a replacement best friend. There were some really funny lines there. The Julia Davis interlude, I was really...
With Seth.
I don't know who she is in this. Like, I don't... Like, who are they?
They're just neighbours.
Are they neighbours?
Yeah, they're neighbours.
And, like, and the bit... Like, and they're having this threesome with this guy, and there's that running gag where they're like, who is he? And they're like, it's the Black Man. And they did that kind of pointing to their face thing. And I was like, ooh, ow, that hasn't aged well.
No.
But, you know, I was like, so there's the running. And then there's that thing in the toilet where they're all in the toilet having this conversation, and she's pregnant and she's having a threesome, and it's all a bit like, and they're all a bit racist, and it's just, there's a lot going on.
The writing in the bathroom scene is amazing. The way they built, you know, obviously initially it's just
because it piles on, it's like a continuing,
it's just Nessa and Stacey, and then Pam comes in, and then, as you say, Julia Davis comes in,
and Smithy's the
Dawn father, and Smithy's, and the way that the rhythm of the writing, I think, is like exceptionally well done.
It is well written. Like, don't get me wrong, this isn't my, it's not aimed at me. Like, I don't, this isn't the kind of thing I find particularly funny generally. I thought it was well written.
Not aimed at someone who cannot understand comedy. You know?
Exactly But I thought of all the characters in it, I liked Nessa and Smithy. Everyone else, not so much.
What about Pam and Mick? Yeah. Like, Pam is just...
What, and Bryn, and you didn't like Rob Brydon's Bryn? What's the matter with
him? I enjoyed his interactions with Smithy, but I found him quite... You know, like, I have a real issue with kind of comedy archetype characters where they're quite, you know, niche in their... comedic appeal, and his whole thing, like, his shtick didn't really land with me.
Okay.
But that's not to say I think this isn't anywhere a bad show. I mean, just from this one episode that
they'll
I watched.
But did you?
James Corden, clearly a massive fan of our podcast and of me in particular, James.
Did you?
Did I laugh at anything? Yeah. God, no.
Oh,
but I enjoyed it, and that's the important thing.
You didn't laugh at all. Did you have sometimes you differentiate between an inside laugh and an outside laugh? Did you inside laugh?
Was there an inside laugh in there? I do seem to recall one part where I smiled. Definitely, it was a Nessa bit. It was a Nessa bit, and I can't remember. She was the original fourth member of All Saints, but she couldn't get on with Shaznay. Yeah. That made me smile.
Okay,
I thought it was funny. Just the deadpan delivery, and there, oh, was that? And she goes, no, that was real. It was. I thought that was good. I like that a lot.
Oh, God.
So that was Gavin and Stacey. Now, what I'm going to suggest we do now is a new thing. It's not a regular, don't worry. It's a continuation of this, whereby let's choose next week's comedy installment. Right, so I've got a few options for you here. You tell me which one I should pick. There is Someone here recommends for James's Joyless Bastard segment. Thank you very much for that.
JJB, I like it.
Yeah. It could be a new name right there. There's Silicon James. Valley. That's been thrown out there.
Yeah.
Oh, Coupling. There's an episode of Coupling in here, thrown into the mix.
I have actually done Coupling,
but it's a very long time ago and I don't remember it. A Modern Family is in here as well. Flight of the Conchords. What are we thinking? Boyd, pick one. Scrubs, season 6, episode 6.
I might pick Modern Family because it's
Modern Family. You say right? Okay, let's look at this.
And it's about it's going to win.
This is from Hell's Bells, and she says Modern Family, season 6, episode 12, The Big Guns.
I mean, I can't remember what that one was, but yeah, sounds fair enough.
Terry looks utterly unimpressed by this.
Hell's Bells, Hell and O'Hara.
No, it's a different one. It's a different Hell's Bells.
Okay.
Terry, are you off watching an episode of Modern Family?
I mean, she hasn't seen that, but yeah.
Right.
I think that's a no.
Okay, so we will attempt to watch this episode of Modern Family by next week. If you have an episode that you wish me to feast my eyes upon, then do tweet it at me, at James C. Dyer, and we'll add it to the list. Right. Shall we get on to some news? A shitload of stuff has been cancelled this week. Have you seen this?
No, I've been away for 4 days. Okay. I don't really know what's going on.
Many things have happened. So Sneaky Pete has been cancelled after 3 seasons at Amazon. That was the Giovanni Ribisi show that, frankly, I've never watched. But that's done.
Yeah, I have. I'm not surprised.
No?
I mean, I enjoyed it a lot. In fact, someone tweeted me recently about saying how much they like Sneaky Pete and why we hadn't really focused on it that much on this show. Now it's too late.
Now they have their answer.
To start with, it was really good. And I did kind of slightly dwindle, my interest slightly dwindled. Yeah. It was, but yeah.
Okay, well, that's gone. Sci-Fi has cancelled both Deadly Class and Happy. Now, Deadly Class, I don't think anyone's necessarily going to miss, but Happy people have banged on about quite a lot. Like, that seems to be quite popular, so. But apparently, there's rumours that Happy might get picked up by a streaming service. Mm-hmm. Deadly Class, not so much.
No.
It's over. Silicon Valley ending as well. So season 6 is going to be the last Silicon Valley.
That feels right, yeah. I mean, as much as I love it, yeah.
So, yeah, quite a few endings there. Did you see this Jurassic World, animated Jurassic World story?
No.
So Netflix are making Jurassic World Camp Cretaceous, which is an animated spin-off from Jurassic World, which will be coming to the service, and it is set within the same timeline as the first, well, as the Jurassic World films, and it follows a group of teenagers who go to Isla Nublar and dinosaurs wreak havoc.
I can't think of
Terry's laughing. Are you laughing at me or the dinosaurs or both?
Both that kind of meeting of you and dinosaurs.
Animated dinosaurs.
Animated dinosaurs.
Do you imagine I'm going to watch a show about animated dinosaurs?
Yes, I do. You absolute loser.
I am absolutely not. I have no interest in it. However, this next animated Netflix series, I am absolutely going to watch. And would you like to know what it is? The Russo brothers, yes, of Avengers Endgame fame, are making a Magic the Gathering animated series for Netflix, and I am on board with that.
What the holy hell is Magic the Gathering?
Oh, Boyd, I love the way you pretend you don't play it all the time with your friends. Magic the Gathering is an intensely nerdy collectible card game. It is one of the nerdiest things around.
Collectible card game?
You know, like how Pokemon's a collectible card game?
Right,
yeah, so it's like that, but it's really nerdy, and it's about planeswalkers and magic and spells
like
and
Pokemon,
things.
Like Pokemon, but really nerdy.
But really nerdy, and it's aimed at, you know, adults. And by adults, I mean man-children.
Are you saying that the Russo brothers, like, after conquering the world
with
the Avengers,
and this is where they're gone?
This is their next thing.
I love the fact that the Russos love Magic the Gathering, and I think we should get them on to play Magic the Gathering live on the podcast.
I mean, go for it.
I think that would be amazing.
Aren't they making a TV series? I did see this of the that doofus from like Angels and Demons and all those terrible books.
What's his chops?
Yeah.
Dan Brown.
Dan Brown. They're making a TV series of that character.
Oh, are they?
Yeah. You didn't even see this. I didn't know this morning.
No.
Yeah.
What's his name?
I'll have a look. I can't remember
his name. It's Robert. No.
Robert, yes.
Robert Langdon.
Robert Langdon. Correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Robert Langdon.
There is going to be, I believe, a Robert Langdon TV series.
Oh my God, I'm not watching that.
I mean, they've signed a deal with Imagine Entertainment, blah, 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 and NBC has nabbed it. It's based on The Lost Simba, which was one of the recent
books. See, they never made a film of that.
No.
Instead, they did Inferno, which
I think
was shit.
A bit of a prequel, isn't it, I think? Or something about,
I didn't read it.
I mean, they are famously terrible, and Inferno was, like, famously diabolical. But, you know, give it a go.
So I want to talk about Chernobyl being the highest-rated TV show ever on IMDb. So I think it's previously held by The Wire or Breaking Bad, but they're both up there, and it's beat them all. And boy, you actually only talked about this last week, right? How incredible it has become.
Unbelievably brilliant.
So it's got, as of Tuesday, just gone, it had a 9.7 star out of 10 average. And that's from 140,000 users on IMDb, which is pretty, and it says that puts it ahead of Breaking Bad, which had 9.5, Planet Earth 2, which had 9.5, Band of Brothers, Planet Earth, Game of Thrones, and The Wire, which were all previously.
And I think what's really interesting about that is that it's like a word of mouth thing, isn't it? It's not because people talk about. I saw someone on social media the other day going, "Oh, it's the latest. This is just the, you know, after Mad Men and The Wire and Breaking Bad." And people put in that saying, "Oh, you know, it shows you have to like to show your." But that's not what's happened at all. This show, I remember when we first told about it. In fact, I absolutely very clearly remember an email from HBO and Sky, whatever, saying, "Oh, you know, we've created this drama, which is a real life look at what happened in Chernobyl." And they were, "Oh, fascinating, good cast." Even at the point where we interviewed Jared Harris, it was still like, "This is a really, really, really good show
that no one's going to watch."
No one's going to watch. You know, it's a bit of a downer. Let's face it. And then people just carried on watching it and going, "Actually, this is one of the greatest things we've ever seen." And that is, I find that process really fascinating.
Yeah.
And it's kind of hard. I think it's really exciting and heartwarming. Yeah, it's absolutely phenomenal.
But do you think, because that is interesting, right, which is about, there are certain shows which people like to have as almost kind of signifiers of their intelligence and their habits and all of that.
Yeah.
But it has made me want to go back and revisit Chernobyl, because I watched the first episode for this podcast and I enjoyed it, but I wasn't completely blown away by it. But I love, like you just said, I love the fact that it's actually just through people watching it and talking about it on social and recommending it to people. It wasn't kind of a big explosive start with huge stars and loads of marketing and all of that. It seems to have been genuine kind of buzz building from it just being really, really fucking good.
And I think you will love it, because each episode does use all kinds of different techniques to dramatise the story so effectively. It is an extraordinary achievement. It absolutely is. And he's put his things, like the writers put the scripts online.
Yeah.
I think they've done their own podcast about it, haven't they?
Mm.
It's just a fascinating example of drama ruling the world.
Yeah, it does indeed rule. Any more news?
Only Mackenzie Crook.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
bringing
God.
Back Wurzel Gummidge to the telly.
This really upset me.
So everybody knows about the John Pertwee series, BBC series in the 1970s. That was brilliantly shit. Definitely factored in my childhood. And there is two single 60-minute episodes, right? So essentially, is it a TV show? Is it a film? I'm sure we will be having that fight at some point. I'm just like, what? Why?
Who's playing Aunt Sally?
I do not know James Dyer.
Yeah, don't know.
Who was the other one? Who was the evil Gummidge? Who was the evil Scarecrow? I can't remember. There was an evil Scarecrow.
But why in this day and age, right? I'm like, modern, zeitgeisty, exciting TV.
I feel it's going to be a Christmas. I don't know. I haven't looked at the story in detail. I feel it's going to be like a you know, Watership Down style Christmas TV event, a recognisable, project, you know, thing. We've heard of it. If you've heard of something, that's enough for anyone now in television to go, right, let's redo that. Mackenzie Crook's a huge talent. He did a brilliant job.
With members of the Detectorists team, right?
He did a brilliant job with the Detectorists. So they're like, you know, what do you want to do? But for him to then turn and go, I'm going to do Wurzel Gummidge, it is unexpected.
Could we talk about the design, like the look? Because I found him so unpleasant to look upon
because he was mucky.
He's just like with the weird.
You mean the original John Pertwee?
No, this one.
Oh, this one. Oh,
like, yeah. It really upset me. The look of it was horrific.
So was the original, I found the original incredibly scary and creepy at the time.
Yeah, it was creepy, but not like, this is actually just quite stomach churning. Like, his face is nasty. No, I have a real issue with it. It creeps me out. It's like, you know, when people have clown phobias. Maybe I've got a scarecrow phobia. But either way, I will not be watching this.
Wow. Well, what if we force you to watch it and we're reviewing it?
Whenever there's a documentary, we'll do it like that, where you two can watch it and I'll just pretend I have and just nod and hope that you don't realise I'm not contributing.
Okay. I mean...
yeah. No one will notice.
Anything else? Are we done?
Nah.
Okay. Let's move on to reviews. First up, is Big Little Lies, Season 2. This follows on from 2017's Big Little Lies, a series based on the novel of the same name by Leanne Moriarty. This was a story of a group of women living in the well-to-do community of Monterey, California, who became embroiled in a murder investigation. And who exactly has been murdered and how and why is something that sort of gradually unfurls over the course of the first season. Now, this season picks up in the aftermath of said murder with Reese Witherspoon, Nicole Kidman, Shailene Woodley, Laura Dern, and Zoe Kravitz, joined this time by none other than Meryl Streep in a cast that would make any huge budget film weep. However, before we continue, I do have to say this. We will not be spoiling anything from season two because that would be wildly irresponsible. But I feel it's kind of impossible to talk about this without referencing the events of season one. Mm. So if you have not seen the first season of Big Little Lies, which was on 2 years ago, people, firstly, why not? But secondly, you might want to skip this bit for the next few minutes. So skip the next few minutes. Gone? Good. Right. Okay. Terry, what was the verdict?
So I only watched the first episode. I think you've watched
I've seen three, yeah.
So, as you say, this opens a year after Perry's death, played by Alexander Skarsgård.
Yep.
And it's very much about where these five women are. They've been called the Monterey Five by some in the local community. And it's different, like, almost immediately. What was so brilliant about the first season was it is so rare in television still that you get that number of incredible female characters which are drawn so honestly, so brutally. They are privileged, they are rich, they are selfish, they are narcissistic, they are egotistical, they are liars, they are cheaters, but they are also, there's really interesting thing it says about their friendships, about them as mothers, as wives. It was absolutely unflinching in its depiction of violence and sexual violence and the kind of consequences for women and their families and communities as a whole. The first season was, I remember I watched it all. I went on holiday and I just thought I'd watch one because I couldn't sleep one night, and I did the whole thing and stayed up till 6 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the pace of the first one was incredible. This opens really differently. The tone is so different. So the first one was just, the writing was incredible. The, like, Madeline, especially Reese Witherspoon's character, had some amazing zingers. There's real kind of, you know, the way they speak to each other is so realistic, very acerbic, really funny, really cutting. Like, there was an amazing kind of lightness in the tone alongside some of the really serious things that happened as the season went on. However, with this, there is a darkness over the entire thing immediately because they are still grappling with what happened. Zoe Kravitz as Bonnie is remarkable. Like, she you can see the weight physically on her. She's so drawn. She's the one who obviously actually pushed Perry down the stairs, and she's dealing with having taken a human life, whatever the circumstances were. And so it takes a little bit, and as I say, I've only seen the first episode, because it's automatically very dark, and the tone of it is, you know, Celeste is still grieving. She's dreaming about her awful, abusive husband, who she clearly still loves to some degree. Meryl Streep is incredible, right?
Like, I mean, that almost goes without saying, but she really
is. But a really different Meryl Streep, right? So, like, there's an incredible, there's some brilliant passive-aggressive scenes with Madeline, especially. And there's a whole thing about her being short. Yeah. And she's like, oh, you're very short. I don't mean it in a negative way. Oh, maybe I do. And then she recounts this story of this girl at school who was horrible to her. She is remarkable and quite unlike any performance of her I've seen before.
Fascinating bit of character.
Isn't it?
Fascinating character work. She almost weaponizes passive aggression.
Yes.
But she's interesting, but she's not exactly an antagonist. She is an antagonist, but you get the point. She's not got a malevolent agenda. She's genuinely wrestling
with this
thing that's happened, but also the fact that she's beginning to understand or suspect what her son, in fact, was and understanding who he is. And one of the things that I was going into this thinking, I was equal parts relieved but also disappointed that this wasn't, like, Alexander Skarsgård is dead.
Yeah.
Because he was horrific, but just so compelling in that way. And his presence continues in this through the flashbacks. But the flashbacks, if anything, are actually more upsetting than a number of the scenes in the first season. There's one in particular where he's like, she's on the ground, he's punching her in the stomach, and it's almost impossible to watch.
But isn't it astonishing that some of the flashbacks as well, and I think this is what it does really intelligently, they're loving ones. They're of him playing with his kids and kissing her gently. And what it does and what it did in the first season is it showed no man who is violent to their wives is violent and abusive 24 hours a day. Mm. It's about the character as somebody who can be incredibly loving and be your world and then at the same time enact this terrible violence.
And turn on a dime. And it's really interesting the scene she has with her quite belligerent therapist. Who
I love her.
So do I. Amazing. It's Robin White, who's the therapist, who is also Calamity Jane in Deadwood and the Sons of Anarchy's lawyer,
We
forget. But yeah, she's amazing in this. And what she draws out from Kidman is like Kidman, she still loves Perry despite everything. She blames herself for part of it. Mm. Like her emotions about this are so complex and so hard to unpack. And so I think that adds so many layers to it. And then Shailene Woodley's character, her emotional sort of compact, that she's discovered that this man, this figure from her past who raped her and who she had a child from, she now knows who he is, and he's now the deceased husband of a close friend of hers, and now her child has two half-brothers, and there's so many layers. Yeah. And the relationships between these women is fascinating. And I love the fact that the first one was very much, I think, kind of a three-hander. Like, it was Kidman, it was Woodley, and it was Witherspoon. Whereas this, I think, Laura Dern has been elevated now to a major character.
Zoe Kravitz
as well.
Zoe Kravitz was one of the few flaws of season one.
She wasn't well served.
She was not well served. And she was a bit, as the only person of colour, pretty much, in the, because she was not well served, and she was a bit of a minor.
Yes.
And you could see narratively why that was because of the result at the end.
Yeah.
Because we didn't know until right at the end of the whole season what had happened, which was brilliantly handled.
Yeah.
But she's now, as you say, fairly, very much to the fore. And I think the brilliant thing about this whole, having this incredible ensemble, is they've balanced the whole thing out. And I think for me the most clever decision they've made is that season one was a crime drama in many ways.
Yeah.
It was a thriller in which not only did you not know who'd been killed or why or who did it, there was like a triple level of mystery, which was incredibly well handled. And at the same time, it was an exploration of abuse and of privilege and of everything, of racism, absolutely everything thrown in. This dispenses with the mystery element. There is no mystery. But I think that was a brilliant decision, because it's the realism of it. I think it would have been, how do we have another mystery in this story with these characters? Yeah. It would have been a bit ridiculous.
This is all
taken the very kind of mature, for me, sensible decision to make it all about the fallout.
Mm. Yeah.
And now all of these characters are dealing with this incredible event and how it's impacting on their lives from Meryl Streep onwards. Because she's investigating, effectively.
Yeah, but that's the tension. Yeah. The mystery is whether or not, because this is all aftermath, whether or not she's going to uncover.
There's dramatic tension, but it's not a mystery.
No.
And I think that has changed the show. And for me, potentially making it even better, because now it's kind of unshackled from a genre. It's just is what it is. It's about these people and their lives and how all these events are impacting on them. The scenes where Meryl Streep with the kids are really clever, I think, because she's so nice and charming. So the kids love her grandkids, and it kind of reflects on Alexander Skarsgård, the way he was with the kids. He was brilliant with the kids, being this horrendous abusing monster to his wife. And I think all of that, how the impact that she's had in bringing him up, I think all of that's going to kind of start tumbling out. I think it's absolutely such a rich thing, isn't it? And we should mention Andrew Arnold.
Well, I was just going to say, and she's obviously directing this and is, you know, done incredible work in film, American Honey, Wuthering Heights. But she has a very specific sensibility, which I think you can really see and is present initially. But to your point, I'm going to be really interested, Boyd, in kind of what the narrative thrust ends up being, because the kind of mystery at the heart of it gave it a certain pace and rhythm as you say, that this tension is going to come from, is Meryl Streep going to uncover it? Are the police going to work out what happened? Can Zoe Kravitz as Bonnie, can she actually live with this? She's not even told her husband. Yeah. She can't. She's essentially kind of mute for much of the first episode because she feels so unable to exist in a world where she's carrying this on her shoulders and is unable to be honest about it. And how that kind of, the rhythm, I'm interested in how the rhythm it settles in and how that pace comes through and how it sustains it, because the absolute kind of desperation to get to the next episode is my overriding memory of the first season. I absolutely needed it and need it, and you just, and this was absolutely binge worthy television.
If it helps to convey this, I did not watch a single episode of Sons of Anarchy between episodes 1 and 3. Wow. I went straight from one to the next. So
yeah, I think it's so, they're so confident that we're so fascinated by these characters, as I think people who watch the show will be, that it is absolutely, you do need to keep watching it. I think that is the brilliance of it, really. That is the incredible.
A lot happens like this is, because this, as you say, this is all fallout. It's about these women gradually unraveling. Like, lots of other external elements come into this, just sort of piles onto them. And it is about them kind of coming undone as all of this stuff unravels. But yeah, it's really, really, really good. I think this is once again written by David E. Kelly, who does all the teleplays for this. Any worry that not having Moriarty's book to work from would cause this to sort of meander a little bit, I think, was misplaced.
And she conceived it with Kelly, which is worth saying as well, because
she was involved.
You know, she drew these women so brilliantly. And, you know, God, do you know how rare it is to see female rage expressed so articulately on television? There is an incredible scene with Meryl Streep screaming. And there's a memorable one in the trailer, which is Bonnie screaming, and the both kind of verbal and silent and emotional rage, the way it harnesses that. I mean, the way it uses nature, the waves, the sea, I mean, it's just so beautifully and lyrically done.
I also want to give a shout out to Charlene Woodley, mainly because anyone would be intimidated beyond imagining to be in a lineup with these actors. And she not only does it wonderfully, but she holds her own as well. And that is no mean feat.
I want to give a shout out to Laura Dern, who I love her character's new tone, which is becoming like this kind of celebrity social media figure. And it is fucking hilarious and brilliant.
Yes, very good. So that is Big Little Lies Season 2. This drops on Sky Atlantic and Now TV on Monday, June the 10th at 2 a.m.
Well, that's the simulcast, as they do with Game of Thrones. But you can watch it at the normal time at 9 p.m. as well.
You can, indeed. So if you want to watch it at 2 a.m., go nuts. And if you want to watch it at the more sensible hour, maybe do that instead. Next up this week is The Act. Now, this debuted in the US on Hulu back in March. Back in March. This stars Patricia Arquette and Chloe Sevigny, and it tells the story of Dee Dee Blanchard, the mother to a disabled daughter named Gypsy, and her overbearing, kind of abusive, quote-unquote, caregiving leads to conflict and ultimately, dun-dun-dun, murder. This is actually based on a true story. So this is events that unfolded in Missouri in 2015. So spoilers do abound for anyone who was following this in the news at the time. The actual show, I think, was inspired by a BuzzFeed article that reported on the actual events. Now, funnily enough, I had never heard of this and I didn't know what it was. I had no clue what this was going into it. And the expression on Gypsy's face in the poster made me think this was a supernatural horror. So I really didn't know what to... I was like, is she a killer doll? I'm confused.
Killer doll?
It could have been.
It was going to be The Exorcist meets Charles
Meets
Play.
Meets Annabelle. Yeah, I was very, very perplexed by this. But I had no idea what it would be.
It's only slightly less over the top.
Yeah, like, I found this incredibly challenging watching, which is something we seem to say about something every week at the moment, which might reflect modern television, but the kind of saccharine smothering attentions of someone with Munchausen by proxy is never easy to watch. But Arquette, and she's excellent in this, is horrifying. It's something we saw last year, you know, like in Sharp Objects, where it's handled quite differently here, not least of all because this one's a true story. But in the same way, I found those scenes incredibly hard to watch. That faux concern that it's all about her need to be needed, and it's a horrible, horrible piece of thing. And obviously, in this one, ends very, very badly indeed. What did you guys make of this one?
I also found it challenging. But everything about it's a really uncomfortable watch. There's some quite challenging stylistic choices. The colour palette is sweet and sickly. I should say, like, Patricia Arquette is incredible, I think. I mean, she's an incredible actress anyway. Joey King is also, who plays Gypsy. But it is, as you say, it's on this incredibly lurid case, and there is something that feels difficult about watching something which is in some way dramatised, and you're not sure about which bits are kind of fiction and overblown and exaggerated, because obviously it's based on factual stuff, but there are certain bits of characterisation that you would imagine are kind of embellished or made more appropriate for TV. I couldn't put my finger on what it was, and it is a really shocking case, and there's something about Joey King and the way I can't explain it. I found it really difficult to kind of sit with. And you know, something like Munchausen syndrome by proxy is difficult anyway, because you know, it's the deception involved and the kind of complex psychology of, as you say, being needed but believing yourself that your child is sick. And it's a very complex mental illness, a very 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 complex mental illness. So it felt lurid and maybe at times a little bit tacky, but I couldn't tell you 100% why I felt like that. It's just something, it made me feel a little bit ill watching it.
Oh, me too. Yeah, I felt very like I needed a shower afterwards. And I remember one point pausing and thinking there was 20 minutes left to go and going, oh my God, I don't think I can cope with this. And not because it's bad, but I just didn't enjoy watching it.
But it's so warped, right?
Yeah, and it's twisted. Yeah. It's horrible. And the fact that it's also kind of true makes it really difficult. Like I did actually go onto Wikipedia and read the true story. And actually that blew my mind even more, because the way this actually pans out is just like, fucking hell. Like, I definitely didn't see that from the first episode. Boyd, were you equally traumatized? Or did you
I completely I think the luridness is the thing. And it's like soft focus. There's about Carrie. If you remember Brian De Palma's, reminded me of that, and I wonder whether I was trying to find out whether it'd been an influence, but I don't think they'd admit it even it was. But Carrie is sort of a weird soft focus kind of gauze, almost like there's a gauze in front of the lens, and you're right, and there's lots of scenes in the mall, and there's lots of pink, and it is sickly, and I think that's deliberate. So I do think the look of it and the kind of slightly over the top.
Oh, it's very deliberate.
Very deliberate.
Yeah.
And I do, and it's the old thing, isn't it? It's the true crime kind of morality of that. And I do think you're left with, because of course the actual real Gypsy Blanchard, for example, the daughter has complained. I think she might have even. I was looking. She said she was going to take legal action. Whether she has or not, I don't know. But this whole issue of dramatizing true crime stories for people that are still alive is a really interesting one. And I don't even know. And I feel like I'm complicit in watching it and complicit in reviewing and talking about it. But actually, it is fascinating and intriguing, very well done. And it's, you know, and it's not like this is, and this is a, you know, a kind of a quality show with a brilliant actor at the centre. Patricia Arquette is phenomenal. And it was also in Escape at Dannemora Morrow was the last thing, which was incredible in that she is. I mean, it's the cliche of she disappears into these roles. Yep. It's absolutely incredible what she does.
I mean, it's no Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3, but yeah.
Well, it's close. Well. So you're left with it going, I don't know whether I should be watching / being entertained, because at some points it is entertaining, because she is quite an over-the-top figure, but suffering from this mental illness, and you don't know what to think about it. Yeah, I think that is the I felt exactly the same way. But I think I'm going to carry on watching it, because
I'm not.
I'm out.
It felt grotty in a way that made me feel guilty almost. I felt ashamed at one bit.
And probably
to the point you're making, which is when it, you know, there's something about these things which are based on real people's lives, very deliberate narrative choices and very deliberate stylistic choices, and it made me so uncomfortable and made me like question my role as a viewer and what I was doing by watching it. And as you say, there are real people still living who are finding themselves portrayed on screen, and does it matter how much is fictionalized and how much is real, and does it matter that they are kind of leaning right into this lurid, grotty world that was created of sickness and sordidness? Like,
I think it does matter. And the sharp objects thing is so interesting, because it is so much, it's got so much in common. But Sharp Objects was a brilliant novel turned into a brilliant TV series. And I think that is the key difference, because this is treading similar ground, but is using real people for its storytelling. And I'm really interested. That the woman who wrote the original BuzzFeed article is writing this as well. And I wonder whether, shouldn't it have been someone else maybe to come in, you know, and take that thing and turn it into something. I don't know. Yeah, I think it has issues. That's all I'd say.
I think people's what it feels like is people's pain for pure entertainment. Yeah. I suppose sometimes we like to rationalise these things by being like, you know, there's a greater good in bringing these things to the fore of debate, revealing the truth, or you know, allowing certain things to no longer just be shameful and happen in secret and all these things. But I don't feel that that's the case here. And maybe those things are fig leaves we need to kind of allow ourselves to be able to watch these things. And maybe that in and of itself is also bullshit. But I think without that fig leaf of kind of any kind of morality or anything, you're left with going, this is pure pain for entertainment. And is that okay?
Yeah.
Sure. I mainly just found it nasty. But okay. That is The Act. And this airs on Starzplay.
You were genuinely, like, the thousand yard stare you just was had was exceptional. Yeah. I had a very small glimmer into what it would be like to be married to you.
Well, he talks bangs on about alembic pentameters.
Yes, exactly. If only we could get to the important stuff, Boyd.
Yeah. That is The Act. It airs on Starzplay on Friday, June the 14th at an unspecified time.
Oh, because stuff arrives, doesn't it? It's like it streams.
That's
just there. It'll be there.
It will just be there. Also out this week is Wild Bill. Quite possibly the most unlikely pitch for a TV show ever. This one stars Rob Lowe as an American cop who relocates to Lincolnshire to head up the local constabulary in the small port town of Boston. Hot Wikipedia fact for you guys. Boston's most notable landmark is St. Botolph's Church, known as The Stump, which is said to be the largest parish church in England.
I'm surprised that wasn't in the opening few scenes where there's a lot of
it's hard to imagine, isn't it?
Dialogue explaining what's going on in the locale.
Well, as Chief Constable Bill Hickson, Lowe and his 14-year-old daughter hope to get away from their past, but also clean up the Lincolnshire streets at the same time. It's notable that this first episode features a decapitation and a car chase in a cabbage patch. This is essentially Hot Fuzz with Sam from the West Wing, minus the jokes. Thoughts?
Some jokes. Well, I happen to know what Terry thinks of this programme.
Oh, so do I. I witnessed it live.
Just to draw the veil from away. She did say what she thought in one of our WhatsApp group discussions. I watched it before I had that news. And do you know what? I'm sorry. I enjoyed it.
Of course you fucking did. In the most, like, obvious thing to happen.
I mean,
go
it's
on.
Entertaining.
Why do you like it? Come on.
It's I think Rob Lowe's very enjoyable in it. I think the cast is great. There's an extended ensemble cast of. So he arrives. I mean, it's clunky, it's stupid, it's ridiculous. It's the pace is unbelievable. Like, they're solving crimes literally in about 5 seconds of each other. The moments, so there are moments when, like, so when the head is cabbage heads are discovered in the fridge of some random person on the estate where another crime has just been solved.
Yep.
Like, that whole scene is hilarious and preposterous and funny, but it's just entertaining. And not everything, so what I'm going to say is not everything has to be, you know, the greatest TV show ever. There are some shows that are just designed to be faintly amusing and entertaining. I'm being filmed doing this rant by Taylor. It's really unfair. And and I think this achieved what it set out to do, which is to be a little bit quirky, a little bit weird, a little bit kind of, oh, you know, one of the stories about decapitated head. An enjoyable, entertaining ensemble. There's a huge amount going on. There's like, they've clearly gathered, I think there's four writers writing this stuff, and they've clearly like got some kind of writer's room, and there's like about eight subplots going on with some rich Russian guy, other rich woman played by Rachel Sterling. It's densely packed with entertaining things happening, and I enjoyed it. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying it's a masterpiece, but it's perfectly entertaining.
That was Boyd Hilton for the defence. The prosecution were not allowed to call Terry Mad Dog White.
Right.
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 First things first. Right. Okay. Classic fish out of water, blah, 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 blah. What I will say is I don't fundamentally disagree with your point, Boyd, which is some shows are allowed to be stupid and deranged and entertained. I was not entertained. I was fundamentally irritated all the way through. Not least of all because it's got some of the most ridiculous Northern accents I've ever heard. So there's a bit where they're talking about, he comes in and he's like, he's a guy from America who knows how to use technology. And a guy, a cynical Northern police officer leaning against the wall goes, oh, well, bloody, somebody is nicking all the bloody fucking satellite dishes off at roofs. What are you going to do with your laptop in that case, Duck?
I don't understand what's the problem.
Literally ridiculous. Nobody, by the way, in Lincolnshire talks like any character in this show. The crimes are ridiculous. The bit with a decapitated fridge is one of the most...
That would have been good.
Oh, my God. The decapitated head in the fridge. It's one of the most surreal things I've seen on telly this year. There is a man singing... What was it? I want to know what love is, was it?
Yeah, so you go.
You hear this. I want to know what love is. He opens the door and there is a guy who is like the most cliche poor/mad person you've ever seen. Like a crazy Rabsy Nesbit in a vest with food stains singing, I want to know what love is to a decapitated head in a fridge. Call it a spoiler, call it you want. And then somebody goes, oh, he may be a nutter, but he's no murderer. I mean, I'm not the most PC girl in the world, but I don't think you can talk like that about mental illness.
This whole thing is my understanding of what happens up north.
Mad people don't sit and sing to decapitated heads in fridges. Like, I shouldn't have
for
to 10 say
years
this.
As well, potentially. Did I understand that plot point right?
It was 10 years. This has been in his fridge for a decade.
So, I mean, I will say, I want to call out one person, Bronwyn James, yes, who was in Harlots and the ABC Murders. I think she is brilliant. Yep. She's so great.
She's the MVP.
She is. I loved her. You know, he's got this daughter who's got these oversized glasses just to show that she's like intelligent but awkward.
He's called Kelsey.
He's called Kelsey, which is, I mean, just my sister's called Kelsey, but there you go. Okay. But there's just...
See, it's a perfectly good Northern name.
None of the jokes...
She's not Northern.
None of the jokes really land. Like, the writing is quite uncomfortable. As you say, it's quite clunky. Or, you know... Which is a problem for me in my TV shows, Boyd.
How can you not enjoy... I'm just showing you a picture of this character, Oleg, who's the Russian, who's such a camp. Look at that
Oleg
picture.
Krasnov.
Google Alexander Yovanovitch. It's hilarious.
I mean, look, it's just so ITV.
Oh, that's damning.
Whoa.
And, you know, it's got any... It could have been interesting. It's Brexit Britain. You've got this, like, suave, sophisticated, seemingly, you know, quite hardcore American coming in. I don't know. I mean, was I entertained? Kind of accidentally. Oh. I will say there is somebody we work with on Pilot called Nana, and Nana says she's seen the first three.
Her name is Julie.
But we call her
Nana.
Her
name is not Nana.
And Nana,
her name is Nana.
And Nana said to me today that she's seen three episodes and episode two onwards is much better. So I'm only saying this from the perspective of having watched episode one, which is just nonsense.
I thought it was weirdly... I thought it was interestingly slightly odd for ITV, actually. I thought it was kind of slightly weirdly not... I mean, I know what you mean about it, but I think it was like... It feels like something completely weird and odd.
I mean, surreal. It was... Yeah. It's one of the most surreal things.
A hell of a lot, you know what? There's a hell of a lot of swearing in it. They're like, fuck this, fuck that all the way through. I thought it was weird. I thought it was weirdly, kind of not an ITV mainstream proposition.
You know what I mean,
I know what you mean, yeah. But I think it's something different, and that's partly why I wasn't expecting it. It wasn't what I was expecting, I think. That's all I'd say.
What were you expecting?
I don't know. But it was like, I was expecting the fish out of water American Cop thing, but it's so much more than that. I'm not saying
there are more layers.
Yeah, in a kind of...
Would you say layers?
strands, to an extent. Strands, yeah. There are more strands than you. So I think I fall somewhere between the two of you. I recognise this isn't the best show ever, but I was quite entertained by it. I mean, I could watch Rob Lowe sort filing. Like, I think he's fantastic. Like, Sam from the West Wing, he's amazing. And I think his delivery is fantastic. Sort filing. Maybe not the best.
What's sort filing?
Filing
is... Why do you need the word sort?
So what you're saying is I just used two verbs and that's problematic.
Yes,
it's like watching someone run jumping. What?
Yeah.
All right, I could watch him perform a mundane administration task.
Yeah, you could watch him playing a fish out of water American Cop in a...
Yes. I could watch him do basic life admin.
As well,
So he's really good. I enjoyed a number of the characters in it. I enjoyed a great many of them. a lot less. I thought it was a bit weird to use the car chase through the Cabbage Patch as a cold open and then go to a 7 days earlier. You know, it's like,
yeah,
in the nicest way, you can do that in CSI when someone's been, like, you know, set on fire or thrown off a building. It's like, he drove his car through a cabbage patch. This is not high drama. I don't think it's like, oh my God, I was going to turn this off, but I'm totally going to watch it now to see what happened with the cabbage patch.
I mean, they've got to use these locations. I'm really trying not to give away the solution to the main crime, and I won't, but it uses the thing, it uses things in the landscape. And I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. I could literally see the writer sitting in the room going, how about we do this with that? And how about we do that? Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like they're throwing a lot.
They have limited topography around the area to make interesting. See, clearly they missed a trip by not setting it in St. Botolph's Church, aka the Stump. But that bit at the end where they do use a bit of the, shall we say, Lincolnshire topography, has some of the most egregious green screen. I thought that took a lot out of that
scene. It was ambitious.
It was. But on an ITV budget, ill-conceived.
I'm not giving away. I'm just saying it's ambitious. I think the whole thing, you know what? I think what I was expecting it to be a much more straightforward crime drama, like a Broadchurch or an what I was expecting. Yeah. And it's not that.
No. I'm with you. And I have to say, like, the surrealism and the... I mean, some stuff is so bonkers.
Right.
And that, you know...
Yeah.
Maybe if you're kind of into... The surprise element, I completely agree with you on, because it isn't really taken seriously at all. Everything feels tongue-in-cheek. Yeah. It's got a playfulness. Right.
Yes, that's what I guess. That's what I'm saying.
When you have a man covered in food, rocking backwards and forwards, singing "I Want to Know What Love Is" while staring at a girl's head, then yes, I think at that point you go, this may not have been what we all thought we were getting.
Either that, or you know you're in the North.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you probably thought this was an absolutely...
It's a documentary, isn't it?
Like, brilliant depiction of what it must be like to live in the North of England.
Yeah.
I mean, the accents. Any Northern person listening to this is going to share my opinion on... If you want to talk about fucking egregious... or whatever that word is, then, like, the egregious accents.
So you're saying written by Southerners for Southerners?
I mean, it's written by Southerners and Americans.
Yeah. Okay. That was Wild Bill, and this airs on ITV, shockingly, on Wednesday, June the 12th at 9 p.m. Also out this week is Jessica Jones season 3, which we didn't actually forget about, although we kind of did, but I didn't because I asked Netflix if I could see it. But turns out Netflix is so wildly apathetic about it at this point that it didn't even make the episodes available. So we haven't seen
this
it.
This is just James's personal opinion. Yeah. It's not the opinion of...
This does not reflect official Netflix policy, but my interpretation of this is that they give absolutely zero fucks and thus have not made the episodes available because they're just like, eh, whatever.
We love you, Netflix.
We do love Netflix.
It's funny because someone tweeted me, Kieran Lee tweeted me a thing from Kaya Scodelario, the great actress, British actress, who is saying,
Kay Scodders.
Here's a trailer showing my husband getting off with Jessica Jones and I'm here for it. And she tweeted the link to the trailer. And Kieran said to me, not entirely under the radar, because I was saying last week how it felt completely. But I mean, you're right. Netflix does washing their hands of the show.
Well, I find it strange because this show must have cost them a significant amount of money to make. And I think, you know, and it's your last one. Like, why wouldn't you make a meal of it and say, hey, it's the last, you know, make it, send it out with a bang, get people to watch it.
I think that is weird.
Because Jessica Jones was one of their best Marvel shows. And I think there's every possibility that this could be a genuinely great, albeit overly long and self-indulgent 13 episodes, as they all are. But, you know, I am going to watch the first few of these. And if it draws me in, I might watch all 13. But if it doesn't, then I won't. But so this does indeed drop on Friday, Marvel's Jessica Jones. And maybe watch it, because it could quite well be good. Pick of the week, I think we can all agree, is Big Little Lies.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Absolutely essential viewing. Make sure you watch that. Now, I think it's time to point out that we have had quite the landslide victory for hashtag Save Banshee over the past week. There was, I believe, one bollocks to Banshee in my timeline and many many testimonials stating that not only do they love the Banshee segment, but they'd also never heard of Marcella. Both of you, fuck off.
Oh, God, like four people. Yeah.
So that is a great big fuck you on both counts, I think. Is there anything you have to say about your wrongness, Terry? Some sort of written apology, you know, something heartfelt. Let's hear it.
I would like to say that I've become incredibly disturbed by the number of people who seem to have all come together in aid of the James Dyer fan club. I'm really, like, spun out by how many of your people are out there.
Yes.
It's a phenomenon.
Is it troubling for you?
It's a cult.
Like, I can't get my head around it. Like, I mean, but I have to say, let's be honest, it was an overwhelming victory for the Banshee segment. There is still some disagreement about what Banshee is, what
the rules
of the rules of Banshee are still undefined, some may say.
I mean, I did define them last week.
I mean, and then broke them yourself immediately. Yeah. But there would appear to be an audience.
Now, would you like a party? Would you like to be exempt from Banshee? Because I know you were saying that you didn't have shows you necessarily want to pull out, and you ended up pulling out that ridiculous... What was it? What were the two characters from that show you didn't know
Neat
the name of?
Neat and Tidy.
Neat and Tidy.
Neat and Tidy, but it wasn't called Neat and Tidy. It was called something else.
It was called Grand Adventures in Bollocks or something. Yeah. But I feel that when you are rolling out Neat and Tina Tidy, you have not only scraped the bottom of the barrel, but you've burrowed somewhere close to the centre of the earth underneath the barrel.
Are you saying that Banshee becomes James Dyer's...
Yeah,
so we've got... Funny, we've got Funny or Dyer yeah. at the beginning, which is a franchise all about James Dyer. Yeah. Are you now suggesting we close the pilot podcast each week with a franchise that only James Dyer can partake in?
Yeah, we're going to rename it Shows James Loves.
Yeah, yeah, you're basically encouraging Terry to bow out of a franchise. There's only three of us, and the other one guys, presumably me, are going.
No, you're sticking with this because you've got all sorts of shit.
He doesn't need you, Boyd. He's got himself.
Can I just say, I want to shout out to Andy at 80 on Twitter, who tweeted, "It's a great section of the podcast, #SaveBanshee. I love hearing about the obscure shows that I've also seen, mainly Boyd Hilton's ones that he recommends." So stick that in your...
Yeah, someone else
Banshee.
Pointed out, like, as if anyone's going to traipse down to some stupid shop and buy a manky secondhand DVD just because James sells them to. Also probably fair. Do you have something to Banshee this week, Terry? Do you wish to continue?
Do a fuck!
Okay, so we're gonna give Terry will drop in and out of this segment as and when she chooses. That's where we'll go from that. Or you can just do what you've done so far, and Boyd and I will nominate stuff, and then you'll just rip them to shreds as we do so.
Oh yes! Oh my God! Yes, let's change the franchise. So you guys are pitching me a Banshee, and then I choose a winner,
like a really shit Dragon's Den.
Yes.
Okay, we'll do this.
Yes.
However, this does fundamentally change one thing. You've actually got to fucking listen when we talk about them, which you have never done today.
I'm listening.
All right. Boyd, do you want to go first?
Have we actually done Rosemary in Time?
I don't think so.
What?
I don't know what it is.
Here we are.
Oh, my God.
Is this condiment-based?
Rosemary and Time, inspired by Terry's choice last week, is all about the...
What did I choose last week?
You know, of that thing that... The
Tina Tidy thing.
Was it called Tidy and...
I think that was the week before, but sure. Yeah.
Scott and Bailey.
Bill Clean and Jeff Tidy, however they were.
Let's do Scott and Bailey.
No. So, Pam Ferris is Laura Time... Felicity Kendall is Rosemary Boxer. Together, they are Rosemary and Time gardening detectives. They are amateur detectives who investigate gardening-based crimes. And it was on ITV. It ran for 3 seasons. And it is still, I show it on ITV 4 or 3, whichever that bloody channel is where they show old crime things. And it was incredibly ridiculous and silly, but brilliant at the same time. It's got Felicity Kendall.
Pam Ferris.
And Pam Ferris. Honestly, you're going to love it.
Where the Heart Is was one of my favourite.
It's literally just an excuse to show lots of nice gardens and lovely gardening things. And people like fall off out of windows while looking at gardens. And they're like, who did that? Who pushed that person? It is absolutely extraordinary. There you go.
All right, I'm down with that. That sounds good. Terry, you on board?
Be that dire.
I enjoy the cast. I am a Pam Ferris fan. And I enjoyed Boyd's pitch.
Thank you.
Okay.
James, it's your turn.
Right, this week I want to talk about Third Watch.
Deathly Silence.
All right. Going well.
Let's go. Let's go. So this is a John Wells show from the 90s. It ran from 1992 to 2005, and it focused on the New York Emergency Services Third Watch. So it's like the shift between 3 and 11 p.m., a.k.a. when all the interesting and or mental stuff happens. Now, what I loved about this is it wasn't like a medical procedural or a police procedural. It was both! With firefighters thrown in as well. It's amazing. It's like a multi-procedural chimeric beast. But it was like part procedural, but it was balanced out with it had standalones, but it also had these great character-driven sort of multi-episode arcs. And there was even a crossover episode with ER fact fans. What's interesting about this is, so it started in 99.
Can't you just say a fact without saying fact fans? Like a total spod. Oh, I've got a fact for you, fact fans. Just say the fucking fact.
Okay.
That was very Alan Partridge.
Okay. So Partridge Free, there was a crossover episode. But that's not why it's interesting. So what's interesting is, so this starts in you're the worst human being alive.
I am.
Right. Shush. Pay attention. So what's interesting, so it started in 99. So this was in flow quite early on when 9/11 happened, okay? So they were less with this thing. Do they continue the show? What are they doing? And they didn't shy away from this. They really leaned into it and they worked it into the fabric of the show. So not just the event of what 9/11 was, but the aftermath of it, how it affected the characters and New York as a whole. And it was really powerful. I think it won awards for its treatment of that. It was also very bloody and violent for a network show, which made it stand out. That and a banging theme tune from The Crystal Method. So, great cast of characters. You had Kim Raver, Bobby Cannavale, Michael Beach was in it, also in Sons of Anarchy. My favourites, though, were Jason Wiles, who played Officer Maurice Bosco Boscarelli, and Skip Suddeth, who played John Sully Sullivan. And here's a fun fact, whether you're a fan of such things or not, it is still an ambition of mine to one day own two dogs, preferably huskies, named Bosco and Sully, after those two characters. And that is actually true. And, okay, Terry's not impressed. This is like that bit, I've never seen Dragon's Den because I don't watch that bollocks, but I imagine this is the kind of face on that they have when they're being pitched some kind of weird finger cuff or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Anyway, to see if people like this,
Pam Ferris and Flick Kendall.
You can pick up the first season of Third Watch for £1.50. Although, weirdly, I had a look, and it seems that only the first two seasons are available to buy on my iTunes and stuff. So I think if you want to watch past that, you might be fucked. But, you know, you can watch some of it.
I would declare that Boyd and Rosemary in Time is the inaugural winner.
I feel a fix is in play here. Yeah. I could have pitched
it's
like
not fixed.
Third Watch. This is the latest show by Shane Meadows. It takes place in New York, where a working class family, high on crack and on the poverty line, are run over by a garbage truck or something. Bitter. And Terry would have still gone, Boyd wins.
Bitter.
This is the... Do you know what I mean? Yeah. A speech of privilege.
Yes.
Because exactly. There is an assumption that he should win because he is used to getting everything he wants in life.
Yeah. Completely. You're sentenced to watching all three seasons of Rosemary in Time.
Oh, good God. As long as I have to watch fucking Neat and Tina Tidy, fine. And that is it for another instalment of the Pilot TV podcast. We do hope you enjoyed it. Do swing by iTunes and let us know what you think, as long as that takes the form of a 5-star rating and not the 1-star that Ned 1012 gave us because the audio was too compressed, even though he thought the content was good. Ned, seriously, 1-star? You liked the podcast. I mean, that's got to warrant 3 at least, surely, I would think. Anyway, I cannot help noticing that Terry and Boyd still have more Twitter followers than I do, so if you could all maybe do your best to address that by next week, that would be lovely as well. At James C. Dyer, thank you very much. We'll be back next week with another round of shows to blast at your eyeballs and, of course, another triumphant instalment of the universally acclaimed Banshee segment, the crowning jewel in the Pilot TV podcast. Isn't that right, Terry?
Yes.
#BansheeSaved. Pilot out.